It's me. It's the D-O-double-G, the road dog, Jesse James. And by my side, as always, is that B-A-double-D-A, double crooked letter, badass Billy Gunn. Together we are the New Age Outlaws. And you're listening to the VOC Nation. And if you ain't down with that, he's got two words for you. Suck it.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the hosts and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer, the Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star, Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality, Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum, the Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter too, at VOC Nation.
Realize that you can watch all of the shit that's out there. Don't let either company trick you into thinking it's a us versus them thing. Just enjoy the wrestling. Whether it's WWE or AEW or NXT, you guys don't have to choose. You can watch it all. That's rad.
Fight forever, Guardian!
I think he broke it.
Look what you made me do!
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Welcome, gentlemen and ladies. Please forgive my garb. I am celebrating our late arrival here to the HIAC Talk Radio Nation because my hometown team just won their inaugural 2020-2021 basketball game. My hometown 76ers, as it were. Hence the garb, the black hooded sweatshirt, and the mask. But don't let that detract you. Don't let my visage distract you from the goodness we are about to bring unto you. Our loyal fans that have been with us week in and week out for the most part this entire horrible, ugly, no good, dirty, rotten year. So we're going to start with the segment that, you know, you would think for a year like this, we're not going to dwell on it. You got to look back, but we're going to look back to a time when it was fun to dwell on the sport that we know of, professional wrestling, back when it consumed every state in the union, and there was wrestling in all 50 states. And not only did they call titles belts back then, and not only was it a title shot, not a title opportunity, and not only were they not, there were hospitals, not medical facilities, but folks, I'm going to take you back to a time when the most important nights of the year in professional wrestling were on Christmas Day. That was a rite of passage in this for most of the South. The Mid-Atlantic area in particular made their hay on their holiday wrestling shows, both Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's how Starcade started, kids. Because of the sellout crowds, the turnaway, thousands be turned away, they would have their Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner in this case early, put on their jackets, mom, dad, and the kids get in the car and go down to the arena to watch their favorite stars every year on Christmas. So that's part of what I'm going to talk about in the historian. There are also a couple of dates here that I wanted to relay onto you. But, gentlemen and ladies, let me just preface this by saying this is the Wrestling Historian. And joining me like he's been joining me, or I've been joining him since we started this facade oh so many years ago. But my toucan Sam, my pots and pans, my man with the plan, the one, the only man in my life right now on this podcast, Dan, the man, Colachico.
I am the only one, and you are my only one. Well,
thank you.
Mark is part of the family. Mark has taken off. He's on special assignment for the rest of the year.
Yes.
He will be back. It was nice to have. It's nice to have the three of us, but it's nice to reminisce back. Yeah, I keep trying to get Dean on just to have him and I on just to,
right,
you know, do an old school one. But every now and then it's nice to just be like, you know what? Craig and I are just going to talk for a little while.
Exactly. You know,
I want to point this out before this technically is Wrestling Historian.
Mm-hmm.
That right there,
I see,
is a WCW German tour poster from the year 2000.
Holy crap.
And it is signed by Daphne, which is what makes it special.
Wow. Yes.
Not the terrible Photoshops on it, because it isn't actually, it's actually terribly Photoshopped. But Daphne signed it. That's all I care about.
Well, just having Sting and Bret Hart on the same poster. That
is nice. Sid's on there. Nice. Jeff's on there. It's a screenshot from a Nitro. Vito's on there. two random Nitro girls. Is it Fire and Tigers?
Yeah, Fire and Ice.
Fire, Tigers, and Spice. The Harris Brothers. One Nasty Boy, Brian Knobs, because he was the only one there. Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
Kurt Hennig. What's funny about it, and you can't see it here, it actually, Jeff Jarrett, it's only half his face.
Oh, okay.
It's only half his face. It's the worst. Daphne signed it, so I had to have it, but it's the fact that Jeff Jarrett, you see that much of Jeff.
Yeah. Like he was on his way out. Or just, you know,
everybody.
They can only afford half of them.
Everybody. And Jim Duggan, who wasn't even part of I don't know. That company was so screwed up and damn. But anyway.
Exactly.
Take it back quick before I talk for another hour.
Well, you know, before the World Championship Wrestling, it was the NWA and more importantly, NWA Mid-Atlantic. And we're going to get to that in a second. But I'm going to look back on some key dates in professional wrestling in this week in wrestling history. This goes back, actually, this is a tie-in to last week's Wrestling Historian. On the last episode of Wrestling Historian, we talked about the death of the greatest Japanese or most influential Japanese wrestler of all time, Riki Dozan.
Yeah.
When he passed away in 1963. But on December 22nd, 1954, that self-same Riki Dozan defeated Masahiko Kimura, the inventor of the Kimura Lock.
I was going to say, wait a second.
Yeah. And Riki Dozan and Masahiro Kimura were both opponents and tag team and would team up. And actually, their match, Kimura and Riki Dozan against the Sharp brothers, Ben and Mike Sharp, no relation to Iron. But they their tag team matches were the beginning of the Japanese television renaissance that started with them. With the Sharp brothers were the first American tag team to wrestle in Japan as heels, and got over so much that their matches on television were shown in shop windows, and streets were crowded with people wanting to see them.
Wow.
Well, this particular match between Riki Dozan and Kimura was to decide the first and only Japanese heavyweight championship. This will be the first Japanese heavyweight championship title ever. And they just started forming a league because of the popularity of Riki Dozan and Masahiro Kimura. And what was supposed to happen was they were going to have a draw and then have a series of bouts around Japan. But it didn't go according to plan. Some were even calling this the first shoot fight in wrestling, or at least in Japanese wrestling history. Ricky Dozan's finishing maneuver was the chop, and he was supposed to hit Kimura on the head, but instead he chopped him right in the neck, stiff, really hard, and Kimura went down, like, unconscious. And the referee had to call the bout, and it was a knockout. So Ricky Dozan was awarded the championship. Kimura never got a rematch. And Ricky Dozan would hold that, the Japanese heavyweight championship, from December 22nd, 1954, until 1958.
Wow.
When they had to retire the title when he defeated Lou Fez for the NWA International belt. That was in Los Angeles. And Kimura never forgot that, and some say he held a grudge, even to the point where some even speculated that the stabbing of Ricky Dozan was somehow set up by Kimura.
Interesting.
Because the knife used to stab Ricky Dozan was soaked with urine.
That's right. That's a that's an old technique. Yeah.
Which seems to indicate premeditation, that this wasn't an accident, that Ricky accidentally stepped on some guy's foot or some guy stepped on his foot, that this was a and Kimura was always bitter about it, but it was never proven or disproven that he had anything to do with Ricky Dozan's murder. But December 22nd, 1954, a huge day in Japanese wrestling history. Ricky Dozan, again, the most influential wrestler in Japanese history, won the first and only Japanese heavyweight championship.
Wow.
Yeah. And staying on today in wrestling history, happy 58th birthday to a guy when I first saw him on that self-same WCW that you were just talking about, and a Clash of the Champions, I became an instant mark for, and I've followed his career ever since. And through different variations, he still managed to keep the same charisma and just the his dynamic ability throughout all of his different personas, even though he's never said a word. Happy 58th birthday to Keiji Muto, the great Muta.
Man, that is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. The great Muta is just a phenomenon.
Yeah. He's the first moonsault I ever saw.
He's the first moonsault I ever saw, yeah.
He's the first guy that I ever saw flipping on the over the top rope into the ring. His combination with Gary Hart, his wars with Sting, were
first show I was at was that that's like huh? When it's retrospective, yeah. You look back, you go, "What did I see?"
Yeah, yeah, he was the most dynamic thing I'd ever seen in professional wrestling. Period. When he debuted on the Clash of Champions under the undercard of the Steamboat Flair 2 out of 3 falls match in at the Superdome. Managed by Gary Hart, and of course their match at he and Sting had a Great American Bash 89, yeah. Classic. He came in undefeated, you know, and it stayed that way for a while. He got over so much, there was talk of changing him to a face, but but without Gary Hart, because Muta didn't speak, which is what made him so effective. He was Sting before he was Sting,
yeah.
You know, just not talking. But he would have made a great face, but Muta was a guy, especially back then, and needed a manager. And just the Mist and the and I'd seen the Great Kabuki in Georgia Championship Wrestling with the Mist, and I guess kayfabe that was supposed to be this. He was the son of the Great Kabuki,
right?
But
I hadn't heard that rumor. Assumption, but you're the only other person who kind of confirmed it.
When he was brought into the WCW, and also because Gary Hart managed the Great Kabuki, and that he had the father and son combination. But
Kabuki.
Where Kabuki was a small guy, had the long hair, didn't have the greatest body in the world, but his kicks, his super kick was legendary because he didn't hop. He just stood on one leg and just took your head. Yeah. And he had a high kick. But again, not physically, but he had great feuds with Dusty Rhodes, with Tommy Rich, with Junkyard Dog. And he was a money-making heel because no one had ever seen anything like him, especially when he came in the ring with the Kabuki masks. And he was, and he had the dual nunchucks. Great entrance. But again, Gary Hart, the mind of Gary Hart, and always, again, in my top five managers of all time. And what he, and he, him getting Muta over. Because in his biggest bout was the Great American Bash with Sting, and he never appeared on camera. Gary Hart did all the talking for him to Gordon Solie, and he was just as over as if Muta had given the interview himself.
Yeah, I just went through. I didn't remember it this way, but I just went through a couple months ago. I've gone through. It started slowing down now because as you get to 92, mm-hmm. Superstars and Saturday Night have all been uploaded to the WWE Network, so it is a slow burn now.
Yeah.
But the first 3 years of, the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. burned through it quick. But they were showing vignettes almost every show leading up – every show leading up to his debut. And, mm-hmm. again, Gary Hart would say stuff, and then the rest of it was just Muta, yeah. Just footage of Muta.
Yeah.
And you don't understand – this is a big mm-hmm. deal. And, it still has that big deal feeling about it. Exactly. And then I almost broke this when I was – sorry, guys. Yeah. But, it's funny. You mentioned that Kabuki didn't have a great body. Muta kind of looked – Muta didn't age.
No.
He still looks the same as he did in 89.
Yeah.
I think he – I don't think he's officially retired. I think he's semi-retired. Like mm-hmm. Another guy I thought that would never retire, Liger.
Yeah,
Jushin. I thought he was going to stay around forever, and he finally officially retired last year. I say finally, but not like happily finally. Mm-hmm. Muta, I assumed, was going to wrestle forever.
Yeah, well, because when I introduced him, he was always reinventing himself. Not just with the makeup, but when he shaved his head and, yeah. When he was part of the Japanese NWO and he was still a very influential figure there and still, very popular in Japan and in both All Japan and New Japan. He made a name for himself, which is very hard to do. Usually if you come from one to the other, you're not always welcome, but he had such high respect from both companies, from both Inoki and Baba, that he wrestled for both of them. But he was one of those guys that I remember the first time I saw him and I was just wowed, and that has never gone away. He was still one of the greatest debuts I ever saw and the most eye-catching wrestler that I've ever seen. Everything that we take for granted now, Muta did it first. Again, the first moonsault I ever saw, the handspring elbow, the vaulting into the over the flip, the head flip over the
great
top
little
rope.
Like snap elbow, and it looked
yeah. And that
the thing about Muta. I'm sorry, go ahead, Craig.
No, but when on all the WWF video games, you can create your own wrestler, and I'd always create and Muta's drop.
Yeah,
elbow
I would always do the elbow.
There.
Absolutely,
yeah.
I would do two running. I would do two elbow drops. I would do. My wrestler was always going to be a mixture of Muta and Sting. It always has mm-hmm. been, always will be when I create a wrestler. So he does both the Muta elbow and then Sting's jumping elbow. This right. does look good. Mm-hmm. But the thing about, we always talk about how good wrestlers look and how smooth.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Sagal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie. People, influences, and experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I don't know how to say this without, because I don't obviously don't mean this out of the way. We've been talking about Muta this entire time. I don't mean this disrespectfully. Muta didn't look perfect. He looked like he was arrested. He was fighting.
Yeah.
It wasn't smooth as glass. Mm-mm. It looked like he was a guy beating the shit out of somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not unlike a Wolverine. Most Japanese wrestlers, they're not ripped. They just look like, you know, they look like wrestlers. You know, they look, you know, they look like guys that can legitimately beat you with their hands or their feet. And, or as Jim Ross said, the educated feet of the great Muta.
Yeah.
Get to tear you apart. But 58 years old today. Happy birthday.
My final point is I always appreciate it, even towards the decline.
Mm-hmm.
Let me rephrase that. Even towards the decline and after the decline of WCW, just to put a finer point on it, they would still bring Muta back in.
Yeah.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff of Vampiro, him and Sting again in the late 2000, mid to late 2000.
Yeah.
And I'd always be happy because I'm like, well, he's just going to be here for 2 weeks. He'd be around for 2 or 3 months. I'm like, yes!
Yeah. I guess I stopped watching during the period in the 2000s. Did Sting and Muta ever team?
No, it was going to be, the feud was going to be, if I remember correctly, I'm sure Muta and Sting have teamed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember.
Okay.
But in those later days, like, it was literally Sting, it was Muta, Vampiro, and the Demon.
Mm-hmm.
Always against Sting for a little while there.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Nico. And, yeah, I always said, because it was originally, it was like, oh, Sting's going to mentor Vampiro. Mm-hmm. Then it, Vampiro fucking him over. Like everybody fucked Sting over.
Well, that's how you get it. He became the Chief J. Strongbow or the Dusty Rhodes. If you want a current heel, we have to, you turn on Sting.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it happened so many times. But it has to be a good turn, not just for the sake of turning, which is what Dusty did, and with Chief J. Strongbow. But happy birthday, the great Muta. And looking ahead, this week is Christmas weekend. What I said at the beginning of The Wrestling Historian, how the holiday of Christmas was traditionally the biggest money-making event for several territories. And I'm just going to throw some out during the years and some of the great influential things that happened on Christmas Day. Christmas Day 1978 in the Superdome. They had 15,900 fans, which was a $78,000 house at the time, which would translate into, I think, $135,000. Right now, but that was the Christmas Day Tag Team Tournament to crown a new United States Tag Team Champions. And in the final round, the team of Ernie Ladd and Stan Hansen lost to the team of Dusty Rhodes and Andre the Giant.
All right, never mind.
Yeah.
I was about to say, what? You're like, oh,
could beat these? Oh, those guys. Okay.
Dusty Rhodes and the Outcha. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah, Ernie Ladd and Stan Hansen, yes, won. No, they lost to Andre and Dusty. And Andre,
okay, I'll give it to you.
And that would be the only tag team championship Andre the Giant ever won. Well, second. He and Haku were the WWF tag team champions. But that would be – let that be the first tag team title that they ever won. And it was on the cover of a lot of magazines of Andre and Dusty with the belt and Andre wearing the belt upside down. But the fact that it could fit around his waist was the most important thing.
Speaking of the After match, After is officially part of the OC Nation Network.
Perfect.
Bob Ryder, as you know, Bob Ryder died this past 2 weeks ago.
God rest his soul.
Yeah, it's I would say wrestling legend, but legendary in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And Ryder and After have been partners and ran that website for a good 25 years, and that was over. It was going to go away, that Ryder passed, and VOC reached out to After, and After was like, yeah. So Raptor does, funny enough, Raptor? After does. The Raptor, there's a dinosaur. he does that wrestling, the wrestling history, wrestling with history.
Yeah.
With Resnick.
Okay.
And now that I'm talking, like, I got to get you hooked up with After.
Yes, hopefully he'll remember me from the Chris Jericho book signing where I marked down more for him than I did for Jericho. And we talked for a good 20 minutes.
People have to understand, like, Nico's a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. A lot younger than both of us. Not just you, Craig.
Ouch.
And I before 2000, and I'll say, and I'll give you five more years, 2005, when broadband was regularly available.
Yeah.
It was hard to get wrestling news unless you were buying magazines.
Exactly.
And as you and I have explained before, I don't want to go off track too much, just a quick version of it. Mm-hmm. The After mags, even when I was a kid, even into the 2000s even.
Yeah.
All the mags, including the After mags, you know, as you go through the years, there's fewer and fewer. That was how you found out what cards happened that last month you missed everywhere else.
Exactly. You know,
it's crazy to think that years later, it's crazy to think that all these years After is still doing his thing. And every now and then I'll see him pop up at shows, you know, before COVID, of course. And hey, yeah. There's Bill.
Bill After, more than anything, is the reason why I'm a professional wrestling fan. The TV is what brought me in, but Bill After's magazines is what told the story. About that filled in all the blanks because the first time I saw Dusty Rhodes was on Championship Wrestling from Florida, you know, 1977. Who is this guy? And then I pick up the Bill After Wrestling magazines and think, oh, that's who he is. And I see him beating up guys that I'm seeing on WWF TV that are like challenging Bruno and running through these squash matches and Dusty's like, I just watched Bobby Duncombe go to main event with Bruno, and then I look at Championship Wrestling from Florida, and Dusty Rhodes is like throwing him outside the ring and picking him up and throwing him out the other side and, you know, taking down Ernie Ladd and all these, like, wow. And then the bleeding, he's bleeding a gut, and the pictures, you know. And I didn't know these things existed. I was watching the Blackjacks. They were one of the first tag team champions I saw, and I remember watching Mulligan. And you know, it's something with tag teams. No matter what the tag team is, one of them always stands out. In the Hart Foundation, it was always Brett. You know, Harley Heat, it was always Booker. And the Blackjacks all going all, even though they were the same height, same weight, looked exact same handlebar mustache, Mulligan just had something. And it wasn't until the After magazines that I found out that this guy, when he went to the Mid-Atlantic on his own, was the number one heel and the number one monster heel in that company.
Yeah.
So much so, Dan, back to my original point, on Christmas Day in the Mid-Atlantic area, he And Paul Jones wrestled for the United States Heavyweight Championship on back-to-back years on Christmas night at the Charlotte Coliseum, selling out two Christmases in a row.
Wow.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, for the United States Heavyweight Championship. Because the Mid-Atlantic made their bread and butter on Christmas Day shows, just like, you know, Superdome did in 1978. And on that same date, Mulligan and Jones fought for the United States Championship. A year later, in 1979, Mulligan and Jones fought the United States Championship in the main event. Jim Brunzell regained the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship from Ray Stevens. He lost it to Ray Stevens on Thanksgiving, and he regained it from Ray Stevens on Christmas night. The first time Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood won their first tag team NWA tag team titles against Paul Jones again and Baron Von Raschke on Christmas night. And that's all the people need to know. But Christmas night was, again, one of the biggest things that happened in wrestling was on Christmas night in stadiums all around the world, particularly in the South. But probably, well, I can't say Christmas night. Now, if you grew up in the Mid-Atlantic and the Carolinas, you know about how Christmas night was always a big deal in Charlotte Coliseum or the Norfolk Scope or even in the Omni in Atlanta or Greensboro. Yes. But Christmas in Texas was a completely different mindset.
Two words. Because... Star Wars.
Exactly.
Sorry.
The world-class Christmas Star Wars edition. Because you have to understand, it was weekly in the Sportatorium. They had wrestling shows weekly. So every single week, you had to have a different angle or a storyline coming through to get people into the crowd and to get people coming back. And, you know, you create new stars. You bring in new stars and you get the fans invested and just in good storytelling. But once a year, at the end of the year, they would culminate all their feuds because they would have enough people to fill up the Reunion Arena in Dallas. 16,000 folks.
Right across the street from the Sportatorium, by the way.
Yes, which is the size of five Sportatoriums.
Yeah.
And you can stick them all in there. And that's when they would have their big Star Wars extravaganza. And more often, it became a tradition that the NWA champion would come to Texas, world-class Star Wars, to defend the NWA championship. And every year it almost became a running gag or a Christmas story. And lo, Ric Flair did dwell in the valley in the shadow of the Von Erichs. Well, he walks in the shadow of the valley of the Von Erichs.
Everybody did in the South.
But every Christmas, Ric Flair knew he was going to Dallas, Texas.
Yep.
Period. And then as the NWA champion, you're known all around the world. And there's holiday cards going on in different parts of the South.
And you're in Texas.
But you're in Texas because you're the NWA champion. And more importantly, you're Ric Flair. And out of all the Christmas Star Wars the tradition was, you know, never bigger than in 1982, where it all went down. Not only... Was
that a Christmas show?
That was the Christmas show, Dan.
I just blew my mind and never put to it. I've seen the documentary. I've seen the match. I've seen all of this 100 times, and it's just, that was on Christmas.
Christmas Day, 1982. 18,000 in Texas, a record gate for the Reunion Arena at that time. It not only was it the debut of the Freebirds as faces, it was the debut of the World Class Six-Man Tag Team Championship. And it was going to be decided on one side. It was Tom Steele and Mike and Tom Sharp, no relation to the other Sharp brothers I mentioned at the beginning of the historian.
The other Sharps.
They would be going against Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy Unfortunately, their Freebird partner, Buddy Roberts, couldn't make the show.
God damn it.
And Michael Hayes said, we'll take them on 2-on-3. We don't care, much to the delight of the Texas fans, because they like these guys. They came in as faces. They were friends of David, because he had, and Kevin, who had known Michael, he would teamed up with Michael Hayes in Georgia. So on his recommendation, let's bring the Freebirds in. Thank you, Gary Hart. But since they couldn't make it, and Michael said, we'll take them on 2-on-3, but who should walk down the aisle to volunteer to be the Freebirds' third man for the 6-man tag team championship, but one David Von Erich? So they would have the match, and David Von Erich would end up getting the pin, getting the win for his team. And it was so the very first world class 6-man tag team champions were Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and David Von Erich. But the seeds were planted, because when David scored the pin, Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy were hugging each other, jumping up and down, raising their hands like they did all the work. And David was over in the corner looking at them celebrating when he was the one that scored the pin. But he said, it's okay. And in the post-match interview, he said to the guys, I know Buddy Roberts is your brother, so I'm going to give up my half, my third of the World 6-Man Tag Team Championship. And when Buddy Roberts get here, that title is his. And Michael, oh, man, you're too much. You're too much. So all is good. Now we get time for the main event. Kerry Von Erich against the NWA Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair. Now, people have been calling Flair a coward because he always got himself disqualified.
Because he is.
Counted out, ran out of the ring, whatever, to save him. But this time, this was a steel cage match. So there's not going to be any running, no running, no hiding, no ducking, no diving, Flair, in Kerry Von Erich's words. I'm coming after you, and I'm coming after that belt. But to ensure that there'll be no funny business, Michael Hayes, now one-third of the 6-man tag team champions, said, I'm going to be in the cage as a special enforcer to make sure no funny business goes around. And my brother, Terry Gordy, is going to be the keeper of the key. So if Flair tries to run, he's going to make sure he don't run nowhere. And he'll be there to open the door for the winner of the bout.
Open the door.
Open the door. So you got Michael Hayes inside, Terry Gordy outside, and the match goes. Kerry and Rick had their standard Kerry Von Erich, Ric Flair match.
Great.
Great. And, you know, Dan, we were talking about Sting, your favorite, and why. And a while back you said, you know, is Sting any good? And I was like, yes, because what Ric Flair had in Sting was the muscle-bound babyface that he could bounce off of, sell for, get gorilla press slam that he hadn't had since Kerry.
Yeah.
Because Kerry was the one that could do all that and look good doing it. You know, bouncing off of Flair, no selling his chops, you know, getting gorilla press slammed, whatever. And during the bout, things are going Kerry's way. And when Flair tried to cheat, Michael Hayes was right there to put the kibosh on him. But when Kerry wouldn't break, even though it was a cage match, Hayes would kind of grab Kerry by the hair and pull him off and say, you know, let's keep it clean, even though we're in a cage match. And Flair got tired of Hayes getting in the way, and he shoved Hayes, and Hayes decked him with that lethal left hand that we would know from Michael Hayes later. Down goes Flair. Down goes Flair. Down goes Flair.
Down goes Flair.
He tells Kerry, pin him. Kerry says, no. And he shoves Kerry, get on him, pin him. And Kerry says, no, I'm not doing it. And Hayes, you know, at the insistence of Terry Gordy, come on, Michael, come on. And Hayes throws his arms up in disgust and walks away. Kerry follows Michael, trying to explain his side, when Ric Flair knees Kerry in the back, causing Kerry to go into Michael Hayes and knock Michael Hayes out of the ring. Kerry reaching out to the outside the cage, trying to tell Michael, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And just then, Terry Gordy would invent the most copied cage match spot in professional wrestling history. That's still copied to this day, 38 years later.
Okay, he's as old as me.
Terry Gordy would slam the cage door on Kerry Von Erich, on the head of Kerry Von Erich. Kerry would go flying back, blade at a gusher, would rule unable to continue. Ric Flair would retain the NWA championship.
You son of a bitch, Flair! It's your fault!
And not only did Flair retain the NWA championship, and not only did that start the most copied spot in cage match history, but it ignited the Freebirds versus Von Erich feud that would go on for another 2 years. Three, to be exact. But the Freebirds versus Von Erich dominated world class and all of professional wrestling for the entirety of 1983 into 1984 before the tragic death of David Von Erich. But the Freebirds versus Von Erich still, to me, the one of the greatest, you know, I said top five, in my top five greatest wrestling feuds of all time, if not only for the amount of crowds they drew, the amount of money they drew, the amount of heat they drew, but it not only put world class on the map to the point where it was the most watched wrestling program in North America, but it made the Freebirds instant national stars. And had things gone not gone awry, world class could have been the one to make the leap into national prominence, because they had already been syndicated in several, in here in the East Coast and in New York and Connecticut, and was branching out into the West, you know, and who knows where that could have taken, to the point where, and Vince McMahon has made no secret, alternatives for Hulk Hogan, one of them was Kerry Von Erich, because he fit the bill of what he was looking for, a young, great-looking superstar with a magnificent body that had the charisma that could carry it. But it all started, and you know, when you look back at it now, and I'm asking you, HIAC Talk Radio fans, if you've never seen the cage match spot from Christmas Day 1982 at the Reunion Arena, it would be a lot more epic if Terry Gordy didn't slam the door so hard that he fell on his ass right after he did it.
Yeah.
But it didn't take away from the moment of it, or the spot, or the historical significance. But of all the Christmas matches and all the years throughout the many decades of professional wrestling, and the Christmas tradition of professional wrestling is a long, rich, and storied one. But I have to go back to 1982, World Class Star Wars Reunion Arena, Flair versus Kerry Von Erich, the beginning of the Freebirds Von Erich war that changed professional wrestling and world class forever. And that, friends, is the wrestling historian.
It was a perfect ending, Craig. And I wanted to get right into this right after you said that, because it's also going to connect into what I want to talk about after this. For younger wrestling fans, like Nico, he's been talking to me the entire time we've been talking, you know, the wrestling story, and he's been listening and loving the stories you tell. That's one of the reasons why I'm glad we do this show, because somebody young like Nico, will ask me, where do I find this? And I'll either link him, or I'll just send him a YouTube video, or send him the file, or him or her, or whoever listens to this in general. I love when they hear that and they go, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, you got to see this. And like, we introduced Nico to the Jericho Cruiserweight Battle Royal Malenko.
Oh, yeah.
Nico was there listening when we were talking about it. And It's like, where do I find this? And I'm like, hold on, let me find the good. Here you go.
Yeah.
And he came back to me a couple days later. Like, that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Like, I told you.
Yeah.
I was just saying, he's comparing Flair. We talk about Flair and the greats and the Von Erich and how great that was. And he's explaining that, you know, when Nico was growing up watching wrestling, John Cena for him.
Yeah. Okay.
That's your champion. Absolutely. And we're talking about how, for other reasons, don't take any offense to this, Craig. I kind of hope John Cena beats Ric Flair's title thing.
Okay.
If not to piss off wrestling fans on Twitter. I like Cena. And everybody's got the six moves of dudes. He does the same thing all the time. I'm like, yeah, like every other. Hello? Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah.
But we're talking about World Class and Flair and that moment. That is a moment. That is one of those moments you can bookmark that changed wrestling.
Yes.
As you mentioned at the end of the segment, it was one of those things that changed the course. Ric Flair was the catalyst of that thing. He made – I want to reiterate again because I laugh at – I don't care if Alvarez thinks I'm disrespecting him. Fuck him. I laugh at people like Brian Alvarez who every week or every day are like, this is the ratings tonight. And I'm like, these ratings don't matter.
Yeah.
And they do, but not in the sense that Twitter thinks they matter.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Christmas Star Wars, and you mentioned how people, their day was planned. Christmas Day.
Yeah.
In the South. And we're talking about Mid-Atlantic, Crockett.
Georgia.
World Class, Georgia. Christmas was planned around these shows.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen anymore. And when I tell you, why I laugh at people talk about ratings on a Wednesday night during a pandemic versus the ratings World Class alone got. It's just laughable to me. This moment, I couldn't oversell how important, how big this was.
The ratings that WMC TV Channel 5 in Memphis, Tennessee got on Saturday mornings surpassed the moon landing weekly. The amount of people watching those Saturday morning in Memphis every week, more people were watching that, were watching wrestling than saw the moon landing every week.
Nico goes, wow, honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, dude, it's the number, and I understand this. In a way, it helps because it helps ignite the competition between the two shows, but I see 958,000 versus 748,000 or whatever the hell. Oh, Sting finally helped him break a million. I'm like, as I said last week, those are the same numbers that got WCW kicked off TNT.
Yeah.
No, just, which is going to go into my next conversation. If you wanted to piggyback off that, if not, I think I said everything. But again, I can't understate. If you could find this, and Nico, I'll do the same as I did for the Slamboree 98 thing. I will try to find an edited or. Hold on, this is wrestling related. I'll try to find an edited or complete version of that moment at that Christmas Star Wars in 82, because the sound that Cage makes against his skull.
Yeah.
Is.
Yeah.
Earth shattering.
And the cage door was like a swinging fence you would have on.
Wham!
Like, yeah. It's not like the heavy cage doors we have now. This was mesh fencing. And it was, and it had a horseshoe lock on it and a deadbolt. So it was to make, yeah, that sound was incredible.
It echoed off the reunion arena walls. And this was a sold-out arena.
Yeah. And fans are crying when this happened.
And trying to kill the Freebirds.
Exactly. When Kerry couldn't. And these are the same fans that were cheering the Freebirds like 20 minutes earlier.
Kill him!
You did what to Kerry?
You son of a bitch! Kill him!
You must die.
So my mom just texted me.
Hey, Mom.
She goes, is wrestling on tonight? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, Wednesday. She goes, and she just, the text back, I don't know if I can, the text back is Sting in capital letters.
Capital letters.
Yes, Mom, I'm aware. Thank you.
Good mom. Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Mom. Yeah, good mom. Mom,
she knows what her baby likes.
Mom supported me watching wrestling. She, you know, when I was able, she would go to shows. My aunt would go to shows, or they would find somebody who, you know, who I was friends with, kid, get him to the shows, please. Yeah. But like she dropped me off at ECW Arena. I'm like, no, Mom, it's fine. And I'm, if she knew.
Oh gosh.
He knew. I mean, I'm sure she did know.
No.
She trusted me. I don't think she was worried about me. Oh, I love Sting. Nico, I love Sting. We mentioned it that week, and I won't talk about it again because we talked about it already, but I'm happy and not happy he's back. As long as they stay the way they're doing it, very happy he's back. But she would not watch wrestling until Foley and Nash.
Wow.
Oh, she loved Foley, but she loved Kevin Nash.
Oh, okay. It was like that. Gotcha.
She would be, oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, she's like, she would tell her husband, my stepfather, if he comes to the door, you're done. That's my pass. I'm like, okay, Mom.
We have similar moms because my mom indulged my wrestling whims and whimsy to the point where we go to the drugstore. And that's the only place that sold wrestling magazines. So I'd pick one up and I'd run to my mom and I'd, you know, beg her to buy. Can you get this for me? And it's only a dollar. Then get this for me. And the way my mom tells the story. So I'm in line at the drugstore and my son comes up with a magazine with two half naked men covered in blood and wants me to buy it. And everyone's looking at me and like, while he's waving around this magazine with two half naked men covered in blood. And it was Dusty and Superstar. And of course, if I don't do it, then I'm the worst mom on earth. And if I do do it, I'm the worst mom on earth because I let my son read a magazine with two half naked men covered in blood on it.
Mom's not like that.
No. And when my dad couldn't make it, or my dad promised me to go to a wrestling match and he didn't, or he didn't come through, my mom took me and even dragged my brother along because he was too young to stay in the house by himself, which my brother really didn't like. So it was because of my mom. I got to see Hulk Hogan's first ever match at the Spectrum, February 1984. This was 3 weeks after he won the belt from the Iron Sheik. And also the debut of the Freebirds in Philly.
That's nuts.
2 years after. But because my dad promised and he couldn't make it, but so I went with my mom. But yes, so it's great to have similar moms that indulge our our whimsies.
I'll text me. So she goes, Sting, and I go, how are you watching this? She goes, not by choice. Her roommate came home and put it on. I was sitting in the living room, and then she was like, Sting? That's Sting? I was like, you got there. And then she said, Sting is Sting. Goddamn right, Mom. See? Yeah. States away, and she's like, hey, I saw Sting. My grandmother used to call me. She hated wrestling.
Yeah.
Hated that my mom let me watch wrestling and go to wrestling shows until a gentleman by the name of Rocky Maivia was called The Rock at the time.
Yeah.
Mama Lagans is awesome, says Sheldon's mama. She would call me every Thursday when SmackDown was on. Go, are you watching the show with The Rock? Like, yes, I'm watching the show with her. But she would have to call me every week to make sure I was watching her man.
And I'm going to tell you the power of Rocky Maivia, because this is back when in the heydays of 98 through 2000, where I actually had guys at a time. And me and the guys would get together and watch pay-per-views and have a big spread party and stuff like that. And, of course, some of the guys would bring their girlfriends, and they all thought it was stupid, so they would all be in the kitchen talking about girl stuff while we'd be out, you know, watching, you know, our sport. But Tua, and it never failed. Every month, one of the girls would just walk by and say, look at this stupid thing. Oh, wait, who's that?
Who's that?
Yeah. Every month! And it would be never be the same one. It would be a different girl or a different girlfriend. That, well, I'm sorry, what's that guy's name again?
Yeah, who's
yeah, mm. yeah. Mm. And your mom had a thing for Kevin Nash. For some reason, my mom had it for Randy Savage. whenever I'd be watching him on a Saturday morning, and like he is a, and my mom.
Well, sir, very attractive women. I don't know if you noticed this. Mm-hmm. Very attractive women really liked Macho Man.
Yes.
So that's that's a compliment to your mama's taste and your mama.
Yeah.
She made such a great looking kid. So I, you know.
But that always struck me as wild. Every Saturday afternoon, she'd see me watching wrestling, and she wouldn't care. But then just kind of like with the women with Rocky Maivia, it's like, oh, he is a fine-looking man. Mm. And excuse me?
Macho Man Randy Savage. I miss that guy.
Yes.
There's a guy I miss during these days. Mm-hmm. God, he had the best, not best punches. Does that make sense? Like, nobody in the world punches like that in a fight, but I bought it when he did.
Yeah.
I loved that guy. He and Hogan together were awesome. They were.
Yeah, and no one could sell like Savage. Savage, that's another thing.
No.
The guy that really thought he was hurt when he could take a great clothesline.
Every time, he did it every time that I thought he was actually hurt and he wasn't. Mm-hmm. Every time I was like, oh, he's hurt. He's not hurt.
And he would sell for older guys. The way he sold for George Steele.
He didn't care. Yeah, he didn't care. Macho Man got it.
Yeah, and it's somewhere. I don't think it's on the WWE Network, but if you can find the match, and Nico, I'm talking to you, kind of Randy Savage versus Bruno Sammartino in the Boston Garden. This is one of the times they brought Bruno back to pop the house because Hogan wasn't there. And the end of the match was Bruno had Savage in his bear hug. And he wouldn't break it. Referee couldn't break it. Called in another referee. He couldn't break it. Called in two more referees. They couldn't break it. Calling guys in from the locker room. Steve Lombardi. Steve King. SD Jones. They couldn't break it. So he had a whole schmoz of people. And by this time, Savage is on the ground, and Bruno won't let go, and no one can take him off. Savage had to be carried back to the dressing room, and no one could break Bruno's bear hug. But Savage had to be helped back, and he sold for Bruno Sammartino in the Boston Garden like he was dead.
It's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Speaking of ratings and looking forward to 2021.
Ooh.
Because goddamn F this year.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, obvious and not obvious, but fuck it. Mm-hmm. I really hope. And you know what? I don't need to preface this because I don't need. I listen to. I'm not making this political. I don't want to make it political this week. Mm-hmm. We know the deal, you and I. So does everybody else, whether they want to know it, or, you know, admit it or not. Vaccines out, vaccines get distributed. I do have a feeling by this time at the end of the year, by this time next year, if not full capacity, people will be able to start to your system going back to shows.
Right.
And I really would like to see wrestling fans at wrestling shows again. More so because, you know, Butch versus Gore has plans, but
yeah.
I would also like wrestling. These are just my wants out of wrestling. Mm-hmm. I would like wrestling to hold people accountable. We talked with Chris Kazama last week. Great interview. A lot of people watched. Very happy about that.
Yeah.
And his solution was just beat the shit out of him. And I agree. But I would really like to see, you know, past social media hashtags. Like, you know what? You're a piece of trash. You need to do better and or get the F out.
Right.
And I would also like people to go back. And I've been guilty of this. You've been guilty of this. We all have at one point of our wrestling fandom to stop giving a damn about the ratings and enjoy the show and stop crapping on others for liking something you don't. Right. Basically, I just want the wrestling business to get better again.
And the thing about the wrestling business, Dan, where it is now, it really has nowhere to go but up. I refuse to believe that it's going to keep its downward spiral. Obviously, what it needed more than anything else, other than cohesive storylines and building of characters and actual wrestling matches that have wins mean something, have injuries mean something, have losses mean something, building up someone, you know, in a progressive way that makes us care about them. You know, they just announced on Raw that in 2 weeks the legends are all coming back. Yeah, and Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels and blah, blah, blah. Whenever I hear that, it means that your current crop of superstars aren't cutting it. So you have to bring in everyone old to make you watch the show again. So you have people that left wrestling like, oh, I remember Kurt Angle. Oh, yeah, I remember Shawn Michaels. Let's watch this show. Because there's no one on today that, you know, that moves the dial for anyone. And what you're doing, you're setting your own people, your new guys up for failure. So if
I still say a lot of that is wrestling, is not the wrestlers, it's bookers and writers.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But even more so, if you've got to be writing now for, and I hate using the term writers for wrestling, but you've got to be planning. You've got to be planning for when the audience comes back. So when the audience does come back, have full crowds during TV tapings, you can go on the road to different venues with people in there. They need something to look at, because right now, I don't think you can run a show, you know, if you were giving away money with the current product that they have now. And, you know, other than the novelty of, oh, we can go to a match, but unless there's something to watch or a character to care about, it's not going to.
They lit a man on fire.
How is that going to get people in the arena?
Well, no, I don't. Well, no, all this stuff is wasted on the fact that you can't. I say wasted. I don't mean in that way. You can't get anybody in the building, so it's not going to draw anybody.
Yeah.
Right now, you're just going for ratings. Which I still think the fans need to not worry about. Just enjoy the shows. Watch it or don't watch it. You can discuss it, but the ratings are. Stop using ratings as a crux for your argument. Is what I'm saying. Ratings is not in what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't indicate quality. Mm-hmm. Not all the time. I know that most of the time it's correlation. Nico was mentioning the moment with The Undertaker. Whether you liked him or not, we talked about it then. We'll talk about it now, shorter term. Whether you like him or not, that moment was wasted without fans in the arena, period. End of story. Exactly. I don't agree that they should have done it without fans in the building. Unless he's going to die in the next 6 months and I'm not aware of.
No.
That was pointless to me.
I agree. I think every theatrical match they have is pointless. But that in particular with Undertaker, especially bringing back everyone, you know, just for that one night in an empty building.
I want fans to be able to see the Hurt Business run roughshod over everybody like they have been.
I want Drew McIntyre to have his WrestleMania moment that was taken from him.
Keep the belt on him.
Yes. Until no questions asked. Until we get people back.
I don't care. If you only have 5,000, then do it. Mm-hmm. But wait. Please, I beg you, don't take this from him. I know ratings. Again, somebody on Twitter, well, the ratings are bad. Yeah, no. Kevin Nash, low ratings, too. He's the worst champion ever. There wasn't anything else on that show that was bad. It was all Kevin Nash. Sarcasm.
Yeah.
Drew McIntyre has proven he can hold it. So hold it.
Yeah.
Please. Mm-hmm. I beg of you.
And there's nothing wrong with being a Diamond Champion. If CM Punk can hold the belt for more than a year, why can't Drew McIntyre?
I don't know. Do it anyway.
Yeah.
Vince. Just do it. Just do it, Nike.
Exactly.
Well, that being said, sir, it's been a good year. We did get Mark back. Screw ratings. Exactly, Nico. We did get Mark back, and he will be back after the new year. He's on a special assignment. Keep it like that. I'm not going to
– He's on a special assignment.
None of your goddamn business. He needs a break. But thank you, as always, for hanging by. We're not done for the year. Wrestling is. The wrestling show. The thing is, I never ever liked or like Drew McIntyre. Well, not for everybody.
I never ever liked The Undertaker.
And I, And I never ever liked Hulk Hogan, so honest to God. The only time I liked Hulk Hogan is when he was Hollywood.
Yeah. That's when everyone started to like him.
That's when those promos worked, because the promos suck. The promos suck. And they worked when he was a bad guy, because they sucked in that way where he was just a sarcastic. My shit don't stink. Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Finally became, when he became Hollywood, it became cool. Now I don't have to hide my hatred for him now.
Yes.
Because all the people that hated him before, the red and yellow and the say your prayers and eat your vitamins, but now I can hate him for real.
Again, retrospective, I crap on him a lot about his in-ring ability because, you know, I'm a wrestler. I'm self-aware, folks. Trust me. I just didn't like him. However, when you go back, you're like, man, listen to that. Listen to that. There's nothing to argue about that. That's it. Yeah, it's just not for you, Nico. Exactly.
No, but that's one of the things I'm talking about to get the fans back. We just talked about, you know, the heat that Hulk Hogan got, the heat that the Freebirds got just from a simple cage door spot.
Yeah.
And it carried that entire company for more than a year and a half. Just on two teams. Getting a heat like that is so effing easy. As long as you make it mean
apparently
something.
Not.
No, apparently not. Apparently it's impossible to get heat on somebody or for to keep heat on somebody. Because I look at an AEW match and people are kicking out of, you know, Swanton dives off of off the top rope and, you know, getting hit with metal objects and kicking out of absolutely everything. So finisher maneuvers mean nothing. And everyone does a dive out of the top off, you know, through the ropes. Every match has a dive in AEW. Everyone. Whereas if one person did it one time, AKA Great Muta, then it's a big deal because that guy did it. You know, I know I like that guy. He does the dive out of the top. He does a dive on the top rope. Everyone does it. Who gives a crap?
See? AEW. Nico likes AEW. See?
For people who like that kind of thing, those are the kind of things those people like. But
he said, but it is true. And then he tacked on, but it is true.
Yeah.
Craig ties a lot of things, but a lie is not one of them.
No.
Back on Hulk Hogan again, and I'm mentioning this more because Nico and other people I see in here might be younger. I hate Hollywood, or I hate Hulk. Love Hollywood. One of the best moments, and it's during an SCW. Why am I editing that shit word? Shitty time in WCW. March 99. Flair and Hogan switch face and heel in the middle of the ring, in the middle of the match before Rock and Hogan. Flair and Hogan did it.
Yeah.
And it's in a cage match. And Flair's doing his I'm bleeding buckets of blood thing. Then Hogan bleeds buckets of blood. And it's the first time he had hulked up since turning heel in 96. And that place went nuts. And that moment is amazing.
Storytelling. Or you listen to the fans. You know.
We could argue the storytelling was bad, but like when you watch it back and you binge it, it's like, oh no. Like my final point, I compare it to the finger poke of doom. Yes, it's not a great story. When you read it and you don't watch it together, you're like, yeah, it's stupid. That's a bad idea. Going back and watching it, they telegraphed it, not how it was going to end, but they telegraphed that a month ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, when you rewatch it, it's like, oh, should have known that was coming. I should have known that was coming. Damn it, they got me.
I'm gonna give you this one thing, and I'll leave it at this. As far as storytelling or making something mean something, Jerry Lawler, greatest wrestler in the history of Memphis. You know why he got over as a heel and it got over as a face?
Because he was actually a jerk off.
A simple chain.
Oh, that's right.
3-inch chain that he would take out of his tights and wrap around his hand. Okay, he would hit his opponent with it. The opponent would be down, knocked out cold, do a stretcher job, do a blade job. Amazing.
Yeah.
Guy, whether he's a heel or a face, whoever got hit comes back on TV the next week, swear my revenge on you, Lawler, because of that chain. That's good for another 3 months of feuding of of culminating in a cage match.
Yeah.
What happens now is someone will take a chain, hit somebody, and then and we'll go down, sell it. But then a hardcore match will take the same chain and hit the same guy 57 times with it.
And that's just the first 5 seconds of the match.
And that's just the first 5 seconds of the match. But one chain, one punch, done.
Show's over.
And you and Jerry, but he did that. And when someone used the chain on Lawler to have him lose his Southern Heavyweight Championship 38 times, and he needed to regain it, because I've hit many people with chain, but no one's ever hit me with a chain. And so Monday night in Memphis, sold out Mid South Coliseum, Lawler's revenge from one chain.
And Nico just said, that's crazy. Exactly. Different.
Yeah.
That's true. With that being said, this is it for the year. We are not – the wrestling is done. We are not done. Because next week, one last Nerd Herder before we go into 2021. Mm-hmm. Craig, where can people follow you?
They can follow me. If you haven't followed me all year, or if you're just jumping on the bandwagon
now.
How
dare you?
Welcome aboard. Plenty of room. Especially if you like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Sixers. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Craig Ligon, CraigLiggons.
Follow me on all social media platforms, DanLaw83 on Twitch. You're watching that now anyway. And YouTube, DanLaw83. The VOC Nation Radio Network is at VOCNation.com. If you have a smartphone, go to the podcast app, type in VOC Nation Radio Network, follow all the shows there, and of course, listen to ours. Again, ratings. Don't talk about them, just give me them. For Craig Ligons, I'm the above average comedian, Dan Kalchiko. We'll see you next week for Nerd Herders.
Easy for you to say.
God damn it. Good night.
Happy New Year, everybody.
This is Lance Storm, and if I can be serious for a minute, you're listening to VOC Nation Worldwide.
VOC Nation is one of the longest-running wrestling podcast networks. Having started way back in 2010, VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts also include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Brisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Wirtz. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirtz, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. Both shows take callers live during the show, and recent guests have included General Adnan, Tito Santana, Haku, Earl Hebner, Danger Sandy Davis, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Brodus Clay, and so many more. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter, at VOC Nation.
Hola, this is your amiga, Shelly from Cali, to let you know you can catch me here on VOC Nation for Shelly Live. You never know what the hell I'm going to be talking about. Sometimes I have guests, sometimes I let you on in the cheese mess, spill a little tea. Sometimes I cry. You have to tune in to find out why. And I also take your calls. I love chatting with you guys and seeing what the hell you guys are thinking. So meet me here on the VOC Nation. Be there or be square.
Rock and Roll Union for the past 2 years has been the place for rock and roll, new rock and roll, debuting rock and roll, and some of the old classics as well. We have welcomed guests from around the world, national artists and more. We've excited many people by our live events. We've welcomed everybody into the fold, and we continue to do so on a weekly basis. Guys, that is Rock and Roll Union, and that is what we do for you.
Saturdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, VOCNation.com. Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro, talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.